Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we'll be discussing bringing characters back from the dead. Should we reevaluate movie ratings decades after their release? And then we're diving into Marvel's return to blockbusters on the screen, Black Widow. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Troy Heinrichs.
I am official.
We're not there yet.
You're jumping ahead. Just relax.
There's a format.
We just gotta get this done. We gotta get this done. Let's go. Chop chop.
Yeah. Amanda said we gotta blow through this episode, so you don't be ready.
I said it because Troy said he has a designated time he has to stop.
I have to be in bed to get my beauty sleep.
God. You've been needing that for a while. I would recommend a lot. That's all I'm saying. Like just a few days of napping.
Wow, that's rude.
I'm hoping he's thick-skinned enough. Otherwise, he's just not going to make it on this podcast. Typically, our episodes drop on Wednesday, but since Black Widow is, you know, everywhere this past weekend, we put this episode out a little earlier. So if you're just coming to this episode, we'll be back on Wednesdays next week. John will be returning. And if you want to skip the Black Widow discussion, just check the show notes for a timestamp. It'll tell you right when it starts, and you can pop right over there. Speaking of, because he couldn't hold it, welcome Troy Heinrichs as a full-time hoe.
Woo! Hey. Woo! Make sure you limit your Blacklist references and Lost references.
Well, this is kind of a Blacklist reference.
Aaron almost did a Blacklist reference because he was like, Black what? Black Widow what?
Which podcast am I on right now? The Blacklist Exposed? I don't know. Which, by the way, if you're going to be a podcast movement, I will be a speaker representing Blacklist Exposed on Thursday. So check that out if you happen to be a podcaster or podcast fan of that sort of thing.
Or just in Nashville need something to do.
Yeah, or just in Nashville needing something to do, because there's nothing to do in Nashville except come see the podcast conference.
And can you watch it virtually?
No, you got to pay to see it, I think, right?
You could watch it virtually,
but if I
gave you a secret URL, maybe, potentially.
Oh, well then, yeah, give me that URL. We'll put it in the show notes.
I hope they hear that. I really do. All right. Well, seriously, though, welcome aboard. Troy is joining the Ho as a full-time member just in time to take a week off next week. So welcome him aboard.
That is the exact way that it works in the real world.
Hey. At some point, there's going to be stability on this podcast.
Hey, this is good enough. This is good. Let's make sure we always have at least three, right? We don't have rotating chairs. That makes people feel comfortable and happy and safe and warm.
Yep. I like it.
And Troy's done a great job.
Aaron's been here for 10 years now. 10 years.
Until technically the end of the month. That's when our...
He's old.
That's when our 10-year anniversary is. And we'll do something for that, because it's a big one. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to do something.
We're going to do a 10-minute episode. That's what we're going
to
do.
So you're giving us like 2 weeks' notice to prepare for a decade celebration episode? I feel like we probably should have prepared better.
I feel like you haven't been on this podcast long enough if you think I'm giving you more than that. That's just not going to happen. Ah, you know what? We'll banter later. Let's get into some movie and TV news. People came here to hear that. And there's not really a lot going on right now. It's summer, so really people are just starting to get back into movies. But one thing happened that I found fascinating. And it's important to note that this is only affecting the UK currently. But the way things are, it could eventually happen in the US. So I think we should be ready for it. You just never know. So here's what happened. The British Board of Film Classification, that's the BBFC, has re-rated Rocky and Flash Gordon from parental guidance, PG, to 12A, which is basically 12 years or older, and as a result of changing standards in society. Here's what they said. Flash Gordon's moderate violence, language, sex references, and discriminatory stereotypes were cited, along with domestic abuse in Rocky. This was based off of less than 30 complaints over the rate. 30! Not 300,000, 30. So here's my question. Here's my opening topic to you guys. Is this something we should be doing? And I feel like you can hear the snark in my voice, and I apologize for that. I should treat it with more sincerity, but I'm not gonna. Is this something we should be doing or even looking at? Or should films retain the rating they achieve at the moment in time at which they're released?
Well, I remember at the time when these specific movies were released, the concept of PG-13 didn't even exist.
That's true.
So I think that it's a fair statement to reassess.
But it did come out in 1985, so I'm just saying that was a while back. They could have done this for, you know, Anyway, continue. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I mean, the hard part about these is the reason why these are coming into the limelight now is because of the anniversaries. So because they're having an anniversary copy released for sale, that's why they're going through this recertification process in the UK. So if it wasn't for the anniversary copy being released, I don't think it would have been such a big deal because it probably wouldn't have even happened. And so I think from that perspective, it's definitely worth saying, yeah, absolutely, like Flash Gordon should be a 12A. Like, I'm not taking my 8-year-old to go to Flash because they would think they're watching SpongeBob or something because it's just crazy. But
it's better than SpongeBob. I'll let you know that. It's fantastic. Better than SpongeBob. Great soundtrack.
It's weird because on the one hand, who cares, right? It's like, if I'm going to buy Flash, I'm going to buy Flash. I'm going to show it to whoever I'm going to show it, because it's not like it's being re-released in the theater. At the same time, it should have been a 12A or a PG-13 or 15B or whatever the heck the UK ones are, because there's like two PG-13 ones over there. And I think that it makes sense that these are appropriately classified for the content that is in within them.
I like the idea of doing this.
Oh, great. I'm officially the old guy who's on my lawn saying, get off it.
I know that there's hesitation whenever it comes to change for anything. I get it. There's always going to be resistance. And it's like, why do we need to bother with this? I think the first piece that stands out to me is film ratings are intended to point parents and children and society in general in the right direction of what's appropriate. Some school films are eligible if they have a certain rating. And so if you're not adjusting those as society changes to what's acceptable and what's not for youth or for adult in mature content, then you're not really helping anything. You're making the changes in society, but then your movies are still at a standstill of saying, oh, no, this is still appropriate for kids. And I think it's also the better alternative than going back into movies and making changes to them because they're not acceptable for society now. It's so much better to just say, hey, this is, you know, this stuff had some sexist remarks in it, and so we're going to give you that warning. Or this has suicide in it. Let's give you that warning, like those trigger warnings to advise you of what you're going to watch and say, hey, this stuff isn't acceptable, but it's something that's part of the movie. And I prefer that much more to retconning a film and saying, ah, we're going to just take this piece out and it'll be totally different. And it's like, what? That's not what the movie was. You're changing the artist's creative vision when they made it, whether it's right or wrong. It's very sticky there. So I'd rather just have the ratings reflect the true time and what we accept, what we're okay with.
Or, hear me out, we do neither. We just leave it alone. That's what we do. We just leave it alone. Because,
but that's not the point of it.
It is the point of it. The point of it, it says parental guidance. No matter what happens, it still said parental guidance. Here's an idea. Do your job, mom and dad. That's your job. That's literally not some guy who's got 30 complaints. Seriously, I've had more for just a podcast. I don't understand why this happens. Why, Troy, back me up, right? Like, just recently.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can have it just for the podcast, and that's not as big as Rocky or anything like that. And the fact that it's society's going to always evolve. They don't always get it right. They're not always correct. 10 years from now, we might feel differently about many topics that people feel passionately about now, which are, you know, what are triggers, what aren't triggers, etc. Parental guidance is already indication enough that you, as a parent, have a job to do. If you don't do your job, that's on you. That isn't on a rating. The rating has already told you, you should probably look at it. Now, if it was G and it needed to go to R, okay. I mean, that's a pretty drastic change. Things have gotten crazy in society. Okay, understood.
Go what in. Was the people that didn't understand what anime really was?
Yeah, there you go. I mean, maybe. But it's but a cartoon, to me, it's G. This is just an overreaction. Once again, it's a society, which I see lots of these days, an overreaction when it's completely unnecessary. I'm totally fine with change. I am not that guy. I love change, but I don't like change for the sake of change, and that's what it feels like. It doesn't feel like a necessary change. It feels like, we should do this just because, I mean, 30 people called. 30 people.
No,
called.
But I mean, it may have brought to their attention something they didn't realize. And for the BBFC,
nobody realized it's Rocky. Thousands of millions and billions of people have seen Rocky. They didn't realize it.
It's the entire point of the organization. That is literally why they exist, is to put these on here. So your complaint sounds much more in line with you don't like the ratings and feel like they're unnecessary because parents need to do their own due diligence anyway. That's not on them adjusting the rating system. That's on a complaint with the rating system in general. I think it's useful. I think it's worthwhile to have it. It also helps in many cases, especially for children, whether something can be seen at a school. And when you're talking about the BBFC going from PG to the 12A or whatever, we're talking what's suitable for an 8-year-old to what's suitable for a 12-year-old. That is very, very different. I mean, I know that it's only a few years in
once
age
again,
difference, but
once
what
again,
is acceptable is completely different.
That's a parental decision. That's not even for the school to
but
decide.
But their whole point is to give guidance on it, to give you a starting point and say, hey, this is where you
who's
should
playing
be
Rocky because- for 8-year-olds, Amanda? I'm just asking, like, what class? Is gym class rolling out Yo Adrian for 8-year-olds? I don't think that's happening. Flash Gordon is not getting watched in schools. It is not. It's not getting watched in homes, let alone in schools. It's just a movie that only cult film aficionados or weird people like Troy are gonna have seen, right? It's fair. It's a movie only people that like weird movies have seen. Kids aren't gonna watch Flash Gordon. They're not gonna stumble on it.
But for Rocky, that is one that's it's all about a rising star. It's about somebody overcoming the difficulties of being an athlete and everything and hoorah, hoorah. If they don't know, if they haven't seen the movie, if they don't know about it and they just see that that's what the movie is about and he's this, you know, sports hero or whatever, then they could say, oh, okay, well, it's PG, so it's fine for an 8-year-old to watch, when in reality, it's like, no, probably not. But we can't work on the assumption that everybody has seen everything that we have seen, because the majority of people are not film buffs. Like, they don't watch everything that's out there. A lot of people don't watch even the most classic films.
And I'm going to totally get Aaron's goat with this,
oh,
right?
Boy. Because you're going to make me mad.
Go the reason why these rating systems exist is because we live in a digital society. And yes, parents...
No, they were created before there was digital.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the main reason why these are here now is because we have a digital society and the digital robots rely on these ratings specifically to say, when I set up my kid's Netflix account or my kid's HBO account or my kid's Disney account, I can say, don't allow anything beyond this point. So I can immediately block Rocky now because I can say my kid can only see G and PG until they're 12A, and then I can turn on the 12A option.
That brings me back to the parenting thing, though. Are you never stepping foot in the room when your kid is watching Rocky or anything else? Like, you just assume your child is complete.
Not everything is down to the parents, though.
Everything here is a parenting fail, in my opinion, because there's no reason to change. I know it's not even that big of a change, but if it's not a drastic change, then it is change for the sake of change.
It is I would argue it's drastic.
I would say that I'm also not being a bad parent because I'm relying on the technology to block the things I asked the technology to block.
I didn't say bad parent. I said a parenting fail. There's a difference. Every parent has had a parenting fail. Every single one. I'm not judging all parents and saying you all suck. We've all been there. I've let my kids watch stuff that I promise you is not good for whatever their age was. But I'm okay with it because I'm a parent and I think you got to gauge your kid. On the same token, you're also responsible for what your kid watches. The machine droid is not responsible. If your kid's watching, you know, if he sneaks one in, that's on you regardless. It's not on Netflix. Even though there are algorithms and there are protections, it's still on you ultimately. It's your job, right? Would you agree with that? Or
yeah, but when there's a device in everybody's hand, I can't watch my child 24/7. So I'm relying on the technology to assist me by saying, I've made the parental decision to say, sorry, dude, 17 is completely off limits, right?
Also, if you have a re-release in theaters, which a lot of movies get re-releases now back into the theaters, this is setting the guidance for who can go in there without a parent versus who needs somebody who is 17 or older to attend with them for the BBFC's guidelines.
Like true story, we went to go see Cruella, and my daughter was like, I don't want to see Cruella. She's 16, right? So I bought her a ticket to go see The Conjuring. And because it was rated R, She was not allowed to go into the theater by herself, even though I was standing there with the usher and the manager. And I said, I give my consent for her to go see the movie. I am the parent. Like, unless I went in the movie and sat with her, she wasn't able to go in.
But see, and they'll get millions of dollars in fines if they don't stay true to the requirements.
But that's going like PG or PG-13 to R. That's a big difference. But
in the UK, PG is just like RPG. It's just parental guidance. It's young recommended. Kids can watch it. Right. It's recommended. 12A is like... It's like the equivalent of rated R almost.
No,
because you literally have to have a 17-year-old or older go into it with you.
Right. It's the same as PG-13. You're supposed to have an adult with you if you're 13 or
No, it's required, not supposed to. You are required. If you want to see a movie, you're 12 years old.
It's worse. See, there you go. Maybe it is a drastic change.
So it's more drastic.
Then it's worse. Then I hate it more. I literally hate it more. It just sounds like it's such a ridiculous thing. Put up a freaking notification like they do on HBO Max and whatnot that this film was created during this time or during a different era or something like that. But to completely change the rating 30 years later, 40 years later, what is the number? Like 40, 50 years later, whatever the hell the number is.
40.
Thank you. To do it that many decades later is ridiculous to me because it's a completely different era. I just think it's nuts.
That's the point, is it's a different era. So as things but change, some of your it ratings is based, should change.
Some of it is based on perception of,
but all of it is, all the ratings are,
that's
all
fair.
Of them are perception.
That's fair.
Yeah. For the people that did that not read the article, just also want to point out that where Aaron's complaining about his favorite movies getting their ratings changed, they also on this board also lower rating standards. So they actually went back in and the original classic first ever Fast and Furious movie was actually downgraded. So more families could enjoy the picture.
Did you write that? Had you just been waiting to drop that out as like your mic drop and be like, let's move on.
I mean, it's a good point though. It's they're readjusting it where things are in the present day. And I think that that's what the purpose of them is. If you give me a rating from 40 years ago, ain't nobody the same person they were 40 years ago. Society sure as hell isn't the same as 40 years ago. So why should the ratings stay the same when it's a guidance for what your kids should be watching?
Well, Amanda didn't even exist 40 years ago.
I didn't. I'm not as old as you guys.
Wow, that hurts, man.
I've got fresh skin.
I feel like we're having a society of thin skin is what that feels like to me. It feels like an overreaction because people are always so worried about what people are going to, and I don't think 30 complaints is warrants that. Now, if it would have been 300,000 or 30,000, okay, I'm listening, you know, and I don't mean like you signed up on a Twitter thing, like you actually went down and filled out a form. That to me is a complaint. Or you went online and filled out a form. Just like, I agree. And retweeting is not like a petition to me. I mean, you really have to do some work. Then I'm on board, but 30, that's not people that want, they shouldn't be changing it for 30 people. I just think it's
but it's
ridiculous.
Something that probably got brought to their attention that they hadn't thought about. And they're like, oh,
maybe, but it worries,
that actually makes sense.
It worries
we should bring
me
it to our board of directors who would have to approve it.
It worries me that would be something that might come into the U.S. because, you know, we become more and more skittish about everything. I can see it. And I just don't want that.
It's already here. It's called Common Sense Media.
We're there.
It's like Common Sense.
Yeah, Common Sense Media specifically is designed so that if you don't trust the MPAA's ratings, you can say, hey, kids, what did you think of the movie and how old do you think you have to be? And hey, parents, how old do you think they have to be? And you average that out and that's what the rating ends up really being. Huh. They'll literally tell you like 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, it has sex, violence, drugs. Now, granted, Common Sense Media is run by a very, I would assume, Christian angle bent to it. So the parents tend to be a little bit more on the, you know, overtly like, scale it upside where the kids are all scale it down.
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah. But I think if you average those two out, I think you get a good court of public opinion rating without having to have a board of people that just need some shit to do.
And I think I would be much more concerned about this if they were only doing it to get more stringent and they weren't reevaluating ones to make them to lower their rating and stuff. Like, oh, this should actually be more accessible. Like you said, with the Fast and the Furious. Stuff like that, it's showing me that they're balancing it, that they're considering both sides of the equation. They just want to keep it consistent going forward. Now, what happens from here? Are they going to redo all of them? do they create a process where they evaluate every movie on a regular, on a certain basis? Maybe every 10 years they have to be reevaluated or something.
That's ridiculous.
But I think I personally think it makes sense because you want to keep up with the times. Right now you sound like an old man.
No, I don't sound like an old man. You just brought Fast and Furious down, which is about freaking thieves driving, breaking every law you can think of and stealing DVD players. Really, they've stole DVD players. So that comes down. But Rocky, one of the best underdog stories ever told, gets harder to see. That's ridiculous. That's not evolution of the times.
I mean, it's pretty violent. I can't watch it. I have to close my eyes because I can't handle looking at stuff like that. It just gets under my skin.
But it didn't get, the ratings weren't changed because of that. It was changed because of domestic violence.
And domestic abuse.
Yeah, domestic abuse. And it just, I don't know. I think we spent enough on the topic. I don't want to, you know, keep kicking a dead horse, but
so for all you playing at home, it's 2-1. Aaron's just a grouchy old
grump. I lost, but get your ass off my lawn. That's all I'm saying. Get your stupid rating nonsense off my lawn. I'm on board. I can't wait to hear what people think. And
it's a good thing you live in the USA then.
That's right. Everybody has opinions.
I need to clarify too, from what I found, the 12A rating is anyone 18 and older has to accompany the 12-year-old or the young person.
Now it's worse. I literally hate it more. I didn't think it was possible. Every time you bring up an adjustment, I hate this more.
It was a correction. I stated the wrong thing. It was just a correction.
It just makes me angry. I'm not mad at you. I'm saying the whole thing just makes me angry.
I know, but you're just so dramatic.
Troy.
It's why we have freedom in the U.S. because PG-13, they can still go to the movie by themselves.
Wait, it should be.
Yeah, 12A is like rated R.
Troy,
that's how you react to rated R.
You brought this up to me earlier, so I know you wanted to speak to it. Apple's in talk to the NFL for taking Sunday Ticket away from DirecTV. And I know they were trying to get a Reese Witherspoon deal for her company too, right? So
yeah, Hello Sunshine, yeah.
Are those two things huge? Like, is Apple TV really going to be a player now, you think?
They could make so much money from Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, yeah. You think about like how much Netflix shelled out for Shonda Rhimes to get Shondaland to be over on the Netflix side versus the network side. And I think that's not a weird Netflix and network. This is the challenge that we're coming into now is how do these streaming services own their own content? It's the same problem that we've had in network television when we say, well, is it a Warner Brothers TV show airing on NBC that's most likely going to get canceled first if the ratings are down versus if NBC Studios, Universal Studios, made it and have it on NBC because then they don't lose the cash. So I think we're getting into that same era with streaming now of people trying to buy up studios and buy up content. For the Sunday Ticket perspective, yeah, the only thing Apple TV has not done well right now with its service is sports. And I think that's a big hindrance because people are more apt to buy the Disney triple bundle package with Hulu, Disney, and ESPN because sports. Peacock has NBC Sports. Everybody, CBS has got sports. Apple TV does not have sports. Mm-hmm. So
it's a good call.
I think it's also the problem that they're going to face because of it, because they don't have sports, where the NFL is going to look at Apple and go, I don't know if I want to give this to you because you don't know how to do sports today. I just want someone to take it off of DirecTV.
Me too.
Because DirecTV is the most useless piece of crap in the entire world. And I don't know how they've been able to keep this long. So please, dear God, just let it Amazon, ESPN, Apple, whoever, somebody buy it off of DirecTV so we can just have our games and watch them on our phones.
I would love that. I really would. And it's insane.
Streaming, making it more streaming friendly. Like, I feel like it's so complicated to try to watch if you're not watching on your TV. To try to watch an NFL ticket game, it's even when I had the code, like I had the access to watch it, it was impossible to watch it if it wasn't directly linked to my TV. And I was like, this is a waste of my time and my money because I can't even use it. So, yeah, I mean, Apple is in competition with Amazon to rule the world. So I'm not sure that I really want to give them more power. I know. but I do like the idea of, you know, from a business perspective, it's appealing. I would be more inclined to pay for Apple Plus if I was like, oh, I get some of their specific streaming shows that are only on there. Yeah, and yeah. I also get sports. You know, it might be worthwhile to pay for it.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. I would.
And cable dies at that point.
I am so excited that it's on anything but DirecTV because I'm so tired of hoping that my friend Tyler, if you're listening, buddy, you know, I'm thinking of you. I'm so tired of hoping Tyler has DirecTV during football season. That's the only way that I get it.
Is that what your friendship is founded on? Is that why he's still around?
I need that password. I need that user ID and password. And that's what he provides. Because I'm not going to get DirecTV just for that. That's silly. I don't need a dish. I've got direct internet. I don't need it. And it's a great advantage that I don't understand, like Troy said, why they still have it or how they even have it. It's silly.
The NFL loses money all the time. I've had this argument with many people over the years, because if it's not on TV, like we'll say it, you know, I'm a Packers fan. And so
don't be ashamed of that. Embrace it.
If I want to watch,
embrace it. Even if your quarterback isn't coming back.
But if the Packers are on at the same time the Bears are on, the Bears game is going to be on TV where we live.
Right.
And I want to watch the Packer game. So what do? I have to go to a bar and I have to sit down and pay the bar somewhere at $15 to $20 to get food and beverages and whatever else to feel like I just patron the establishment because I'm watching the game. I'll just give that $20 to the NFL on a week by week basis. I don't need to buy all the games in a Sunday ticket.
Right.
Just let me buy my game. Buy my game, call it a day, and I'm happy.
Right.
I'll get you in touch with Tyler. maybe we can work out some kind of threesome. Wait, that came out really inappropriate.
Totally, I was going to say, especially because it commented on my butt one time.
Can I join in on this just for my husband, just because of the Vikings? I mean, he has a terrible taste in football teams, but at least I might not get divorced.
At some point, we're paying for Tyler's thing and Tyler's getting it for free.
Yeah, at some point he's making money.
Here's what we do. I'm not even like he won't listen to the podcast. I'll just give you guys his user ID and password. We can all use it at the same time. And if he notices, he notices. And I'll be like, I was watching on like three devices. It's crazy. Sorry about that.
I had it on every TV in my house. I didn't want to miss a second while I was peeing.
Exactly. You got this down. I think I'm going to go with that. All right. Well, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, and we're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. And now you know why Troy's joining him, because he's got all this information. We don't want to research stuff. That seems like a lot of work. Actually, Amanda did too. So technically, I'm the one that's failing, is what it sounds like, because I still don't like this whole stupid rating thing. Can we go back to that? Let's just have another 10-minute discussion. Wrong.
Let's move on. People are going to stop listening.
Hey, Patreon.
Argue anymore.
Patreon is a way to support your favorite podcast. If you're still listening, maybe we're one of them. I don't know. But if you want to help us, you can go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, and you get immediate access to whatever content is in your respective tier. Now, we just had a bonus episode. We have Bad Movie Night every month where we look at a movie that we don't think is so bad, but it got some kind of flack along the way, although the last time was Tokyo Drift, and that was a bad movie, so we made a bad call there. It was just, it happens now and again. But that's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider if you want to support the show.
And every dollar you give, Aaron will match a dollar to donate to the British Board of Film Classification. Piss. So he can buy off his ratings.
Piss off.
You, oh my God.
You wanker. what other British expressions are there? Sawed off. There, I know that one. Sawed off.
Oh, I like that one.
All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Bringing characters back from the dead. So obviously this question stems from Black Widow getting her solo movie long after she sacrifices herself for the good of the universe in Avengers Endgame. I don't know. We'll kind of talk about that a little later. Did that kind of cheapen her death? I don't know. We'll talk about it. But movies and TV have long pulled this gimmick, right? Just like comic books and novels, where a character we believe to be dead is brought back for some unknown purpose or fan service. So we're going to talk about that. So let's start it off. Do you have a hard stance in terms of the idea of bringing back characters who were clearly killed? And I don't mean we didn't see them die, like the Hound in Game of Thrones, right? We never saw him die. So it's not really a death. We just assumed. I'm talking people who were dead.
Like Han.
Like Han in Fast and Furious.
Yeah, yeah.
He is so dead. He literally became a barbecue at his own death. So, but whatever. Do you have a hard stance on that? Do you have a hard stance in terms of how you look at that? Where a movie or a TV show retcons that and kind of just pulls it out of their ass that, no, the character survived miraculously.
I think it depends on the universe that I'm in, whether it's a TV show or a movie. If it has some sort of supernatural element where it can bring someone back to life, I'm more forgiving of it. It does cheapen the stakes, though, so the writers have to work harder to win me over in my anticipation of any potential death that they may be facing, because I've already, at that point, I've seen them survive death or come back from death, I should say.
Right.
And so then it's a challenge for me to buy into the stakes. But when it comes to something where that's not the case, and I'll go back to Fast and the Furious, it's a franchise I'm not going to stop watching because of it, but it does irritate the hell out of me.
They've done it
twice.
They're
just blatantly, yes, they're just blatantly like, we'll fake it and it'll be fine, or we'll bring them back from the dead, or we'll just change things.
Man, you know, like, they made two whole movies about the people that died that came back.
I know. True. I know. It's ridiculous. So it pisses me off, don't get me wrong, but it depends on how dedicated to the series or the franchise or movie of if I'm going to continue watching or not, how much it pisses me off.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing with death, and it's about story. So if you're going to kill off a character and it's going to cause other characters to have certain story arcs, and then you come back and change it later, I think that is absolute garbage, right? If you can say the quote-unquote fake death was written in from the originating point, so like we always knew they were never actually dead, then I think it totally works fine, because that also drives good story.
Mm-hmm.
And because then you can say, like, oh, because this, you know, they made this decision, it affected all of these people. So when they come back to life, then it's a question of, well, how do these people interact with the fact that they've been duped? And if that's part of the story, then that makes sense. If it's just, oh, we wanted to bring him back or her back just because we like the character,
or because ratings made, you know, they ratings plummeted fell after that character died, and uproar and all that stuff. Yeah, intentionality.
I never like it if it's not woven in this story. Like, there's some shows where I think I've heard Supernatural, it fits really well. I don't watch Supernatural, so I can't speak to that. But I know, like, in Game of Thrones, you know, when you've got the Hound wasn't explained as dead. But then you have characters like Jon Snow, who you understand because it's built into the actual mythology of the show, that it works. Like, things like that would work. So I'm okay with that. It's when you're talking about a show that deals with cops or something where it's not supernatural in any respect, and somehow that character survived. I mean, Dallas is like the big one, right? I mean, in terms of when Patrick Duffy dies and then, oh, it's all a dream. What? No, it wasn't.
That probably pisses you off even more because of the dream thing. I hate dream sequences.
I don't like dream sequences. It's just a thing. I don't like it. Every time one pops up, I'm like, man, you lazy son of a bitch. You can't think of something better. But anyway, I'm never a fan of it. There's like a few things in storytelling that I really hate. Coming back from the dead without a real solid world universe reason. Twins. I hate
twins and triplets. How do you feel about triplets?
I like them three times as much, or I hate them three times as much. I don't like them three times as much. I like actual triplets. They're wonderful people. I'm sure they're delightful, and they're all similar in a myriad of ways. But in terms of in storytelling, he's not dead because he had a twin. What? I hate that. I absolutely hate that. That's worse than bringing a kid
on a separate note. How do you feel about clones?
Hate it. Same thing as twins. It's just a cheap writing gimmick.
But what
so
if
you can
that's the intentional it? Thing? Like, there's a bunch of clones out there for a specific reason.
If that's a story.
I'm thinking of Orphan Black.
Yeah, if that's a story, I'm okay with it. Like, it's built into the story, like I said. If it's built in, like you've got the Clone Wars in Star Wars, I'm okay with that. It's built into the story, but it has to be, and I just won't watch those because I don't like clones or twins.
Don't use it as a cheap plot device.
It's like, to me, it's like watching As the World Turns or Telemundo. I'm just waiting for the, what? You know, it feels too soap opera for me.
Fair enough.
Telenovela. That's what I meant to say. Not the whole channel, just telenovelas. So there we go. So you talked about stakes. So what about stakes? As in, does doing this erase the stakes of a property? I mean, you've got Black Widow, who died in Endgame and probably had the most powerful death in the whole Marvel world. Now she gets her own movie after she's dead. You know, I mean, so do you think stuff like this cheapens the stakes?
I don't think so. I mean, especially in the terms of Black Widow, having just seen it, right before we recorded the podcast. I think that I thought it was really well done and how they were able to do it. I think it's also complete BS that they didn't give Scar Jo her due diligence and gave her her own movie during the 10 years that this whole thing was going on.
She deserved a trilogy now that you saw it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could do a whole lot of stuff with her character that would have fit within the timeline just fine. I mean, we had 3 Iron Mans. Did we need 3 Iron Mans? I mean, really? Do we need 3 Thors? 4 Thors? Like, it's almost ridiculous when you think about it in that regard.
4 Thors and 7 years ago.
Sorry. Someone's going to make that joke. But, it comes back to story. I don't think it's a property issue. Like, I could buy Han coming back in Fast and the Furious for maybe 50 cents, not a full dollar. And is it going to ruin the property because he's back in there? I don't think so. I mean, I'm more upset by the other characters from that third movie being in the ninth movie than I am about Han being in the ninth movie. But at the same time, it just depends. I think it really all comes down to, was it the intention of the story to begin with versus was it just written in to write in because we wanted to be, ooh, look at us. We're super creative and we came up with this cool idea. Just to go, haha, we fooled you all. Like, that doesn't work. If the story calls for it, it's fine.
Like I was saying earlier, you really have to work hard when you do something like this to keep the stakes meaningful. Because when you do this, people are immediately going to be like, oh my gosh, I'm crushed. This person died. I loved them. I cared about them. Or, hell yeah, thank God they're gone. And when you remove that, they're going to be like, okay, when are you going to dupe me again? You know, like, I bought into this and you just cheapened it, or you just have to work harder to make it work. Whether it's part of the story or not, I have a hard time with that. So you're going to have to still work harder to convince me that the other moments following it are meaningful and significant and that the stakes do exist. And when it comes to Black Widow, what you guys were asking about, you know, if it cheapens hers, yes, they should have done her movies throughout like they did with Iron Man and Thor. I think that would have made it significantly better. But I don't think that going back in time nullifies the significance of her character's death, because it's still back in time. It's things that happened prior to her death. Her death still ends up being meaningful. Now, if in the next phase and they have another movie where the Avengers are together or something, they have her character in a bunch of flashbacks or she comes back somehow, then it's super cheap and then I'm irritated.
See, yeah, or you get her from like an alternate dimension or something.
Right.
God, don't multiverse me. I just can't.
Well, it's called the Multiverse of Madness, so
yeah.
Or bring her character and it's just a different person because it's in a different universe, like Spider-Man, like Peter Parker and Miles Morales. That kind of thing I'm okay with because it's not the same person.
Right, it's not the exact same character. Or right. You have a different character where the Black Widow name or something like that. Because obviously there's a lot of Black Widows out there. It's not just the one. For me, bringing characters back from the dead almost always like just cheapens the stakes immediately. And whenever I'm watching, I used to just, this is an example, right? So I used to love Angel and I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Love both shows. I still love them, but, in the end of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Spike is killed and he's given a very, very kind of moving death. He finally sacrifices himself, right? He finally does something good in his life. And it's kind of impactful. And then he comes back the very next season in Angel, and it's almost like nothing really happened. I mean, he didn't really do a whole lot. He didn't really sacrifice himself. So for me, every time I've gone back, because I've rewatched Buffy several times, rewatched Angel several times, it didn't really hurt the impact of Angel in many respects. But when I watch that Buffy finale, every time I feel zip. Nothing. Because I know he's fine. He's not coming. He was coming back. So to me, it completely killed a wonderful character moment that I really loved until then.
I still get teary-eyed.
Oh, that was 2 fascinating takes that you both talked over each other. So I'm kind of, can you separate it a little?
We'll let the Buffy fan go first.
I still get teary-eyed. Whenever I see Spike, because he ultimately still made that sacrifice, but it affects me in Angel. It doesn't affect me in Buffy.
Okay.
If that makes sense, because the stakes were still there in Buffy. Buffy didn't have any additional episodes, because that was the series finale. And then an Angel is where it starts to change, because then he's there and he's back. And so it affects me there.
He raped her. He raped her.
Yep.
He raped her. He has no redeeming quality whatsoever. You may think he was going to get his soul. You may think he was doing a good thing. Spike has always been about Spike. And that was complete garbage. Angel should have come back in the finale. And Angel should have been the one that sealed the deal. That would have been the true ending. Spike, hot garbage. Like,
well,
it totally was.
I think
was,
the
like,
rape didn't align with his character at all.
That was weird.
Like,
Well, I mean, he was a vampire.
Like, what are you doing?
He's evil.
Like, Spike's a fun character. Spike's like the, you know, Barney on How I Met Your Mother. He's a fun character to watch. You love and enjoy him, but he does not get the redeemable moment. Like, Willow should have closed the void or something. Or Xander could have closed the void. Or Charisma Carpenter's character, Cordelia, could have closed the void. Anybody, Giles could have closed the void. Come back from the dead. I don't know. But anybody but Spike. Like, that just, it cheapened it for me. I hated it. Hated it.
He's the only character where I pretend like that didn't happen, because it just did not feel, it didn't feel like a natural moment. Like, this was the progression for him. I was just like, where is this coming from? You know what I mean? Like, they just made his character insufferable.
It's coming from the fact that because he did something from a selfless act, the powers that be gave him his soul so that he could come back to life to go on to the other show. That is the only reason Spike was written in that way.
All right. Well, let's discuss some times where it worked or didn't work and why those stuck with you. Amanda, you kind of started to with Buffy, right? With Buffy, because her first death was fantastic. And one of the...
Oh, it was amazing.
They ruined it. Not only going to the network, but they completely ruined that death. It was a great series finale. It would have been.
Yeah, I love... And you're talking about the second one, right?
Yeah. Any of her resurrections, really.
Yeah, so her first death was fantastic, and I love the way that she was brought back, because it was like, okay, you can die for a minute or two and still be brought back. That I will buy, you know, where she technically died. And her last death in season five, right? Season five?
Yeah, season five. No.
She did the most amazing thing where she sacrificed herself. She was at peace with it. Everything was great. And then the show got renewed and they didn't plan on it. So then they had to find a way to bring her back. And it was like, it was really hard, because it was such a perfect way for her character to go out and for the show to close up. However, I will say they made me buy back into her character, at least, because she didn't want to be there. She didn't want to be back alive. She was in heaven, things were good, and they made it complicated. They made her death coming back so complicated, because when we think about resurrecting characters, even for a TV show, it's often for selfish reasons. It's because we want them back. And that's the same reason for Buffy's resurrection, is these people wanted her back. We're not really thinking about how that person's going to come back or where they were, you know, because we don't know what's going on after you die. And so I actually really liked the writing of that, of how they handled her coming back into the world. It wasn't all butterflies and rainbows and like the Slayer's back. She's ready to do her thing.
I mean, I love the first Buffy death because it brought Faith.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Anytime you get Eliza Dushku on screen, I'm like, I'm in.
She's
kill
great.
Everybody if Eliza's going to take her place.
Kill everybody. I'll give you one that really... irks me. It's in a movie, but Ripley in Alien Resurrection. Like, I don't think Alien 3 is a great movie, but it's a solid movie. I really kind of like the idea and the themes of it more than I like the execution. And I know Fincher fans are like, you can't say that. The wonderful movie. It's fine. it's fine. It's not okay. Yeah, it's okay. But Alien Resurrection, where they're just like bringing her back and she's, what is she, Troy?
A clone. What is Ripley?
Yeah, she's a clone.
She's a clone. Yes, yeah. She's a clone.
So I hate it. I absolutely hate it. There's just no reason why they should have done that. Like, expand the universe, do something different. I know Sigourney Weaver's awesome. I think we can all agree Sigourney Weaver is freaking awesome. On the same token, move past it. It just, she had her arc. It played out. Let a character be dead and move on. Commit to the choice you made. So that one always really bugs me. Just bugs me. That and Phil Coulson really pisses me off. Phil Coulson pisses me off because that's probably the only really impactful death in Marvel anymore, simply because of the fact that they're all so non-impactful. I mean, Black Widow, she got her movie. I'm still thinking she's going to come back into the universe because of the multiverse. So it hasn't completely impacted me. So Phil Coulson was one where I actually like got hit in the gut, and then he gets a TV show. I'm like, look at Marvel. You die and you get a TV show. What a great deal.
We're talking about ones we loved.
You can go either way. I think we've kind of talked. I mean, like Jon Snow, I loved, and that came back. But I already talked about that one. So yeah, you can do either way. Well, just talk about anything that bothered you or didn't.
I'll do one good one and one bad one from the same TV show, and that is Revenge.
Oh, are you going to say the one I was going to say?
Probably.
I hope so. Do it.
The one that was bad. The whole premise of Revenge, for those that haven't seen it, is Emily Van Camp plays the lead. And she's on a quest to basically take down everybody that was responsible for her father's death. Well, at the end of season 3, that pretty much happens. And now with his name cleared, he's like, all of a sudden, right at the end of season 3, at the start of season 4, he shows up alive. And you're just like, WTF, come on, this is so dumb. Mm-hmm. I was so angry because they only did it so that they could get the 4th season. And it just, like, I thought season 3 was going to be it. And it was perfect. It was like, boom, boom, boom. Simple Netflix series, it would have been awesome. But no, they have to bring her dad back from the dead because he was never actually dead. I hate that. That's the trope I can't stand.
I can't stand that.
Where they're dead, but they're not actually dead.
Yeah. People go to the funeral. You'd think they'd look at the body. Oh, no. Oh, by the way, it was a closed casket. Nobody mentioned that before? Nobody. In 3 years, no one mentioned that it was a closed casket? Okay.
But then at the end of season 4, the main character, the villain of the show, Victoria, she ends up getting murdered, and then you find out at the very, very last sequence of the entire series for the series finale that she wasn't dead, and part of the issue was that Emily Van Camp's character ends up giving an organ donation to a woman to find out that the woman was actually Victoria. So the woman she's been trying to kill the entire show, it's like a what do you want to call it, a tragic ending in a way. Because now a part of her is always going to be in Victoria, who's now alive. I thought that was freaking brilliant. And I was like, yes, bravo, awesome.
That sounds like
you're missing one.
So good. You're
sounding which one am I missing?
You're missing Lydia Davis. She was the best friend. She of Victoria. She somehow managed to survive falling from a high-rise balcony onto a park taxi and also a plane bombing.
Yes.
Like, both of those things. She was
a robot.
This show sounds awful. Really. I never watched it, but the show sounds awful.
It's actually a good show, but it's not something you would like.
Is it? Is it though? Is it?
I did a podcast on it. It must have been good.
That doesn't really mean it. You've done a podcast on literally everything, Troy. So remember that dome? Remember the dome one? That was fun, huh?
Yeah.
Right? I'm sure you did a Twilight podcast or something.
He's totally. The one that I really like though is and this is actually a good and a bad one, again, from the same kind of series, was Battlestar Galactica, where in Caprica, which is the prequel or pre-show or prior to Battlestar Reboot 2004, Caprica, the whole premise of Caprica was that they were building the Cylons to fight the war that's happening on Geminon. And the guy that built the Cylon, his daughter, ends up spending more time in virtual reality. So she finds after... she ends up getting killed because she's part of a terrorist group. Her avatar in the virtual reality world is what gets downloaded into the Cylon to give the Cylons the consciousness of their ability to become their own race. So like that death was great because the way they brought her back actually sets up the story for how the Cylons come to be.
Yep. That works.
You know, come to the end of the sequence. However,
it's gotta be Kara, right?
Kara Thrace and her coming back as an angel or whatever the hell she was, like that was just D-U-M-B, dumb. Dumb, dumb, dumb.
I remember watching that and, man, I remember watching that and like the first time through, I'm just like, that wasn't bad. Like everybody hated this. It was fine. I didn't mind it. It was kind of a good versus evil kind of thing. I dug it. And then you go and you rewatch it, because I rewatched it a couple times, and you rewatch it and you're like, so everybody had to be in on it. Right? At some point, like she fooled everybody. Like, it's just, it's a really dumb construct when you really, really pay attention to it when you're really, because the first time you're not really paying attention to it because you don't know what's going on. You didn't know that that was the issue. But then the second time you know what's happening, so you're paying a little bit more attention to it and you realize it is very dumb.
Yeah, because it's like, when it happens, you're like, I thought she crashed. I thought she died. Why is she still here? I'm so confused. Mm-hmm. And then when you find out why she's there, then it's like, oh, she was never there to begin with.
Yeah. You gave one of the best characters the worst send-off possible.
Yeah.
Really?
Because it was her ability to do the final jump to get them to where they needed to go, but it wasn't really her. Like, that makes no sense.
Oh, it's frustrating. Frustrating. Oh. Any other ones worth mentioning real quick before we move on to listener comments?
I'm surprised you didn't bring up Mulder.
Oh. Well.
Because you're the X-Files guru.
He didn't die, though.
I mean, did he? He died.
No, he just disappeared. I never thought Mulder was dead. I just thought he was just gone. You know? So to me, that's not the same thing. But Cigarette Smoking Man, I'll go to another X-Files one. Bringing him back for the resurgence, they can go to hell. Chris Carter can go straight to hell for that. That was the cheapest cop-out ever. Because he blew up just like Han. A freaking rocket went right at the man. He blew up. I don't know how exactly you can explain to me that he dodged that bullet, but I'm not buying it. It's nonsense. So, there you go.
The annoying one that I have to mention before we finish this out is Michael Scofield from Prison Break.
Man, that's such a good one. It's like annoying.
He literally had a brain tumor and also got electrocuted.
And had a funeral.
And had a funeral. Like, the whole thing. The whole nine yards. And he's suddenly not dead. What?
I mean, I'm of two minds of that. Number one, I hated it.
Did he Buffy crawl out of the grave site?
Hang on. I'm of two minds of that because I did hate it. On the same token, when they brought him back, I'm not going to lie, I was so giddy. I was just like, oh, thank God. Because I really enjoyed
that fifth season. I loved it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, right? And it was kind of garbage that he died to begin with because I'm like, what a piece of shit. What kind of shit is this? Why are you killing the best character for no reason other than it's cool? And then he even had a movie that went straight to DVD that showed how he died. So I literally watched him die. If you never saw that, you literally watch him die. And it's nonsense. It's complete nonsense.
Oh, but see, that then narrows a TV show, so that's not part of the canon.
Well, I've got the DVD.
His funeral was still part of the TV show.
I literally have the DVD, Troy. I've watched it recently. It counts. I mean, it says The Final Break right on the box. And then they were like, well, we could make a little bit more money on this. So, you're just kidding. He's actually, we worked it out. So he's at a prison somewhere. He faked his death and what? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Yep. Stupid. Yeah. But you know who can always get away with dying and not dying?
Who?
And coming back? Horror movie characters. Michael Myers. Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger.
That's an excellent freaking point. Okay. Keep talking.
They all die multiple times and they all come back.
How did we never
They
mention
are invincible.
This? How do you feel about that? Are you on board with that or you think it's ridiculous? It can be both.
It is ridiculous, but this is where I have the most forgiveness because it's just, to me, it's like a horror movie trope. It's just part of the cliche that you can use where they can, you know, they have some sort of invincibility to them where they can come back and it doesn't really keep them down. And that's part of the horror movie trope in general is like if you shoot someone through the heart and you think that they're dead, you know, maybe the bullet moved in a different way. So you always have to shoot them in the head or cut their head off to make sure they're actually dead. But I'm pretty sure some of them have been set on fire and then they still don't die. So they come back.
It's Supernatural, though. I covered my bases earlier, so I got an out. It's Supernatural. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I don't care. Those movies are always fun to me. I don't know why. Don't judge me. I got a problem. But
unless the movies are connected.
Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees, though, would you Jason really Voorhees, say they're supernatural?
How is he not supernatural? He's literally had an axe in his head.
And I'm saying.
He's a freaking zombie in half the movies. How is that not super? Now, Michael Myers, they always want to present it as he's a real dude. He's just really evil. Really evil? bitch, he's been getting back up. He's been burned. He's been lit on fire. He's been stabbed and everything. That's more than just evil. Jeffrey Dahmer was evil. They killed him once. He stayed dead.
It takes witchcraft, I think, to get rid of these villains.
That's got to be supernatural, and that's my out. If it's kind of supernatural, I'm okay with it. But also because I really like those movies, and I'm okay. I want the cool killer to come back, you know, because then, you know, he just kills a bunch of other college kids, and then it's good days.
And they learn that sex is bad.
Yeah, I don't even care about that. I just like to see the cool kills. Like, oh, he pulled him up by a sleeping bag and slammed him against a tree. That was awesome.
Yep.
Michael Myers just stab, stab, stab. That's all he does. He's kind of lame.
And Freddy works because Freddy's only in your dreams.
His is supernatural to begin with.
Absolutely.
Until you connect movie one and movie three together and they realize what the parents did. And so they bring him out to the real world and actually kill him for real. That's when it gets a little far-fetched after the third movie.
But it's still supernatural because he's
there
in the
dreams.
That's
when it's far-fetched. Wait. So somewhere Troy's watching this as a documentary, like of the first three movies. You're like, oh, I could totally see this happening in the real world. Oh, shit. That can't happen. That's a lie.
Not to mention Freddy versus Jason puts them in the same universe. And so there's these two massive serial killers that apparently are just making their way around the globe, but meet back in the same area.
Hang on.
All this spiritual, natural stuff going on. Where the hell is Spike? Why isn't he closing up this stuff?
I'm still on little Troy Heinrichs watching Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and about an hour into it going, wait, this isn't real? What? That's what I'm picturing right now. Like, I'm totally on board. Now this is kind of bullshit. What is going on?
I thought this is the stuff that happened in California. You're telling me this isn't what happened in California?
Goddamn hippies.
I love the first movie. I hated the second movie. And when Dream Warriors came out, I was like, hell yeah, Nancy's back. Let's get to it. This is great stuff.
I didn't like when Nancy was back. The second one is just not a great. There's actually a really cool documentary on that movie. You should find it. I can't remember the name of it, but you should find it. It's really interesting.
The second movie?
It's fascinating because it's really I think it's based around the lead actor or something. I can't remember. And I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank completely on the name of the movie. But it's a documentary, and it's because there's a lot of gay themes in that movie that were at play that they were trying to do like a deeper. Kind of a deeper story, and obviously it didn't translate well to the movie, but the documentary is really fascinating, and how that guy, you know, emotionally kind of took a toll from the film and everything. Like, it's just really fascinating if you like the behind the scenes of movies in general. The name of it is Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street. So find that. There you go. It looks at the second film. It's fascinating. It's about Mark Patton and kind of what he goes through. So you can definitely check that out. We should probably move on, but we've got some listener comments. So, Amanda.
So, Scott Calgaro says, if you're reviving dead characters, you're one step away from being canceled. I think there's a place for that to have some truth. And I think it, again, depends on the universe you're in and the reason behind bringing them back. If you're reviving characters because your viewings, your audience viewers plummeted after a character died, then yes, your show is about to die.
I think that's a fair argument, actually.
That makes me super nervous for a certain TV show.
Is this the TV show who must not be named? The Blacklist?
He can only do it once an episode.
And I did it for him.
You're encouraging him. Don't do
it. No, I said once a quarter, didn't I? Or once a month?
Something like that.
Was my stipulation.
You're basically like, if he was a drug addict, you basically just put a line of coke right in front of his face and said, you don't want to snort? You don't want just a little, you know?
And to be honest, I was referring to Lost. But anyways, Jen Ryan said,
it's just as bad.
That's worse. Because
that
show
is worse.
Less enjoyable at the end. Sorry.
Jen Ryan said, for me, it depends on the show and the universe the show lives in. Take Supernatural, for instance. It was a common occurrence for characters thought dead to come back to life somehow. If it's the universe of the show. However, in other places, it becomes trite and absolutely lessens the stakes when it happens on shows where it's just a big stretch to believe it could happen in the first place.
We need our resident supernatural guy, John Davenport, on the episode to talk about this. But, I mean, it's they're vampires, right? Like, they come back as vampires and demons, I would assume, so.
They're people.
That works. No. The people who come back from the dead, I'm assuming they bring them back as vampires.
Sam and Dean Winchester, the lead characters, have died and all come back. I think Sam was dead for like a whole season, the way I understood it.
Oh, well, that's
I didn't want. I watched like
I need seven an explanation episodes. Now.
I do too, but not right now.
Well, clearly one of them is dead to the other right now, so.
Oh.
No, they made up.
Or it was a stunt, okay?
I don't think that was a
we
stunt.
We talked about that. I don't think it was
a stunt. Phil Steven said, faking a death is okay once. Coming back from the dead is a non-starter. So are you guys okay with faking a death on TV?
Yeah, totally.
As long as it's believable?
Yeah, as long as it fits the story, right? Like, I fake my death, therefore it causes this chain of events, and because of this chain of events, we get more character stories from the characters that it's impacted by. And then when it turns out that, oh, hey, I wasn't dead at all, like we were talking about Victoria in Revenge, I think it's super great because then it's like, holy crap, she wasn't dead. What are they going to do about that? And then you get a whole set of stories that come out of that as well.
I don't care as much about the story when it comes to faking a death. I care about the logistics. So
you can't see their car blow up.
Yeah, you can't actively see them burning in a car that is upside down, surrounded by people.
Surrounded by people within 6 literal feet of the car.
Yeah. They were social distancing from the fire, but they were all watching as Han died and somehow got out of the car.
Yeah. Just like crisscross and was gone.
Right. Because
it was a clone in the car. I'm telling you, it was a clone.
Oh, my God. No, it was a ghost, apparently, according to the Fast 9 logic. Yeah, I'm with you, man. I just don't like it. There's nothing about faking it or about coming back from the dead that works for me. And especially if you see it, if you actually see it, logistics have to work. Like if you're going to fake a death, it's got to be manageable. Like you've got to be able to go back and watch the episode where the character died and say, right. Okay, I can see how they got out of that.
Yep.
If you go back and you go, man, that's. No, there's really no wiggle room there, then I just have a hard time with it.
And if they pull it off, I give them even more props because
sure.
you have to have first convinced me that I thought they were dead or they were going to die. And then I would have to go back and be like, okay, let me rewatch this. And then I'm like, oh man, I missed it. I missed where there was an opportunity for them to have faked their death. And so they're fine and it makes sense. And I'm like, wow, good job for you. But it's such a cliche that you have to do it for the right reasons and in the right way.
And I think, I really feel like in this day and age, networks and movie executives, whoever, need to be really a little bit smarter and more media savvy about this, right? Because I do think too often, you know, a character will die in a show where the death has been faked or something like that, and they don't do an interview, and then you don't hear anything more about it. Well, that to me says they're still in the show, you know? So what they should be doing is doing an interview where they talk about how they died on the show. You know, they should be doing that kind of press because then the audience believes it. Because I could tell you as a diehard fan of shows, if I don't hear that exit interview or I don't get some kind of confirmation from social media, I automatically don't buy it. It's the age we live in. You guys know what I'm talking about? So they really need to do that. I think social media and networks and movie companies, everything, they need to step up their game if they're going to fake deaths and make us buy into it by committing to it on a social media level too.
That's a good point.
And sometimes it's like commit to it and sometimes the fans still don't believe it.
True. Yeah, that's true.
There is one fake death that worked out for me, and I bought into it thinking the character really was dead, but logistically it worked out where this character wasn't dead because we didn't actually see her die. We saw her get shot, but she didn't actually die. And that's from Orphan Black, Delphine Cormier. She didn't actually die. And I was like, oh, wow, they did a good job faking that out. And they tried to pull it along through the show. And it seemed so believable, like everybody mourned for her death and she ended up coming back. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Good job.
See, I've been trying to get Aaron to watch that show for years.
You just spoiled
it's
it.
So good.
And I withheld that one in particular from this discussion, so it didn't ruin it for him. So screw you, Amanda.
He's not going to watch it. I've been trying to get him to watch it too.
It's about clones. So I automatically have always been hesitant about it. I do want to watch it eventually because I do love the lead, but you know. We'll get there.
It's so good.
It's not clones in the way you think it's clones.
Right. Yeah. And it's set from day one, episode one, how this works.
Hey, we got to get to Black Widow here. We don't have much time. All right. So we're on a time crunch, according to Troy. And I think we're pushing it. So We got to move on. I don't want to get barraged with my I haven't watched Orphan Black hate. So upcoming releases, recommendations, what's coming out?
Space Jam, A New Legacy is coming to theaters and HBO Max on July 16th. A rogue artificial intelligence kidnaps the son of famed basketball player LeBron James, who then has to work with Bugs Bunny to win a basketball game. Sounds so dumb when you read the
when you say synopsis. It out loud. Yeah.
Yeah.
Escape Room, Tournament of Champions, July 16th in theaters only. As the title suggests, the latest installment of the Escape Room saga goes Running Man style as the players try to take down the evil corporation, only to find themselves in one final escape to the death. Except the players all have something in common. Starring Taylor Russell and Logan Miller and directed by Adam Robitel.
Saga? Hang on. Escape Room saga?
It sounds ridiculous.
It sounds amazing. Now I kind of want to see it.
The Green Sea is coming to VOD on July 13th. A heavy metal musician lives a life of isolation until her world changes by the appearance of a strange young girl. This one has Catherine Isabel, if you remember her from Ginger Snaps, which I do because it's such a great movie.
And on July 14th, over on Netflix, Gunpowder Milkshake hits our streaming devices. Lena Headey and Karen Gillan star in a mother-daughter movie of trained assassins fighting a war to reclaim all that was taken from them. It's directed by Nevat Papashuto, and it's amazing. And Amanda's going to have a review up on the site, I believe, very soon.
Yes.
Okay. Any recent film or TV recommendations before we get into Black Widow that you want to mention, Troy?
It's funny, but we mentioned Black Widow and the... in the Russian aspect of all of this, because I have been watching the third season of Killing Eve finally. And for some reason, I just kept thinking would Jodie Comer be better in Black Widow? Would the stuff that was happening in Black Widow, would they be better in Killing Eve? If Killing Eve were to continue, if Jodie Comer ever were to leave?
Yes.
And I was just like, I was so like completely mind mesmerized at this whole concept.
Yes,
but the third episode, the bus scene in the third episode is got to be the most amazing scene in that entire series. I loved it. It was so good.
It's a great show. She's Jodie Comer and deserves everything, really. Just everything.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Agreed.
In the four seasons coming, and it'll be the last.
Yeah.
Sad
panda. Amanda?
So on Netflix, you can watch the first part of Fear Street, which is 1994, but they also have the second part, which is Fear Street 1978. And then coming on July 16th, there is Fear Street 1666. And 1978 is very much like the campy 70s and 80s horror slasher flicks that you would enjoy.
I can't wait.
Yes. It still is following the story from the first one, so they are very much so connected, but you could still watch this one independently if you hadn't watched the first one. There are some things that may be a little confusing story-wise, but I think they laid out pretty well in establishing things. But it's all about the kills, right?
I doubt it's that deep, but yeah. Exactly.
No, it's about the murder.
Exactly.
There is one disappointing scene where it would have been so... they don't show the murders that are as brutal as I was hoping. They should have done it. Netflix, you should have done it.
Cowards.
Why would they do it when they took out the suicide scene? They're trying to make it all, you know, PG instead of 12A.
Well, they show some really good slasher kills in this next one and in the first one, but in this one especially. But there was one moment I was like, man, do it. Go for it. And they didn't do it.
Chickens.
You cowards.
So what we're saying is Amanda is super dark.
Hell yeah, when it comes to my movies.
I want
to
see it. Don't worry, in 10 years, they'll rate that unable to watch. They'll just ban it completely.
That's fine.
You won't even be allowed to watch it anymore. Because that's how the man's going to dictate your
life.
Well,
I don't
life.
Want them to take it away. Don't take away the art. Just put a warning on the
You're
art.
You're not even going to be allowed to watch it.
Oh my God.
Society has deemed that kind of film is horrifying. You just should not be able to watch it because it ruins the child.
They've been trying that since like 1940
exactly.
when they established
them. So let's not help them, Mando. That's my point.
In the future, it'll be G because it's going to be like The Purge in real life.
It would be if you take my movies away. I've been watching Alone. The latest season is on Netflix, The Million Dollar Challenge, where they basically have to go, 10 people go into the Arctic. And it's like, it's a reality show for the real world. Like it's a real survivor show because it's 10 people are dropped in the middle of the Atlantic. They have 5 to 10 miles that are all their own and they have to survive 100 days in the Arctic in the winter to win $1 million prize. And it, you know, as an avid backpacker, I can tell you like all the stuff you see is real. Like that is legit. They are really doing it. And it is fascinating to watch because some of these people have come up with some of the most impressive designs in terms of like shelters and how they are going about capturing game or how they're, you know, fishing, whatever they're doing to survive. I mean, it's fascinating. Of course, there's always a few people that I'm like, how did you get here? Did they just like, they needed five people? They just needed five people. So they stopped by Walmart and picked up five extras. What happened? But there are five really great survivors on that show that are well worth watching. So there you go. Alone. It's on Netflix. And I think other seasons are on Amazon Prime and other ones. Now we're going to talk about Black Widow. Before we do, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group, which is The Hollywood Outsider. It's a closed group, so you always got to look for it. We're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn, and our site is TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Please rate and subscribe us. We always appreciate that. You can find Troy on The Blacklist Exposed and at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and at Sink Into This. Me on The Blacklist Exposed as well and Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. Now we're going to talk about Black Widow. Now, I want to preface this with spoilers are open. So if you haven't seen the movie, watch out. Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff, aka Black Widow, confronts the darker parts of her ledger when a dark, dangerous conspiracy with ties to her past arises, pursued by a force that will stop at nothing to bring her down. Natasha must deal with her history as a spy and the broken relationships left in her wake long before she became an Avenger. Now, it's important to note that this movie takes place after the events of Civil War, because Natasha's on the run from Secretary Ross in the U.S., and she's sent a gaggle of vials by her Russian plant sister, Yelena, who's played by Florence Pugh, which serves as an antidote to a mind-controlling drug administered by a sadistic villain named Dracoff for his manipulated Black Widows across the globe. She then has help from her former fake family, Alexei, who's played by David Harbour from Stranger Things, the Russian Captain America in his own mind, basically, and Melina, who's played by Rachel Weisz. And then Natasha, she finally kind of tells us what happened in Budapest as she explains why they had to kill Dracoff to get into S.H.I.E.L.D., and she also took out Dracoff's daughter, Antonia, as well. Well, Dracoff lived, as did his daughter, and a whole lot of help from technical prowess has kept Antonia alive as Taskmaster, who's an assassin who can mimic any foe's attacks. This is a very important distinction because it's a much different character from the comics, as Tony Masters trained himself to mimic foe's movements, and it was very much his own choice. And then, of course, Natasha has to bring down the still-alive Dracoff, save a ton of Black Widows. Whew. There you go. That's what happened. To start it off, are you glad Black Widow finally got her own solo movie? And what did you think of Scarlett Johansson taking on center stage, Troy?
Hells yeah. Totally great that she got her own movie. I love the female power in this. Rachel Weisz, when she came on the screen, I was kind of like, is that Rachel Weisz? Like, it looks like Rachel Weisz. Is it her daughter? Because it's like she can play any age, I swear. And I'm just mesmerized by everything that she does on screen. So kudos to Rachel for her role in this one. And how adorable was Florence?
Hang on,
as Yelena.
You're jumping way ahead, brother. Stick
Slow
to the question
down.
I asked you. Scarlett Johansson, are you glad she got her own movie? And what did you think of her taking center stage? We'll get to the other ones.
Well, I was talking about the movie in general.
Yeah, well, you can wait. Follow the line of questions. Let's go one by one.
There's no following. No, Scarlett was great. I much prefer redheaded, long-haired ScarJo over blonde ScarJo any day. She was badass. She was great. And this was totally well overdue.
I'll be honest. I shouldn't say I didn't have any interest, but I was very low interest in this movie coming into it. I was just like, yeah, I'll watch it. Like, it'll be fine. I hadn't had any real reason to be excited about it, mostly because I felt like her character did a whole lot of not much in all the other movies. There were things that she did, but they didn't give me a real reason to care about her character. So this movie kind of changed the way I view that character in general, and in the MCU specifically. And I thought it was great. And when Trey is talking about the girl power, this is very much so, to me, an interpretation of what it's like for women to feel oppressed. And
I'm coming back to that.
Not, yeah, to not feel like they have control over their lives. And, you know, I felt like there were a lot of allegories to human trafficking, to sex trafficking, to domestic violence. There was a lot of that. And so the moments where they become free were freeing as a female in the audience also. So I thought it was fantastic. And ScarJo, she's great. I mean, and the choreography in this for her stunts, awesome. I loved it. So badass.
One thing I noticed in terms of, it's funny because for the longest time, I didn't really want a Black Widow movie. I mean, I really didn't think Scarlett Johansson, not that she was bad, but I didn't think they gave her character anything to do except look really great in leather pants, you know, which she does. Yeah, granted. But I know she's a good actress. I've seen her in a lot of other stuff, especially when you've seen her work as of late. You're like, wow, she's a really great actress. Why is she doing Black Widow and not getting anything to do? And then, you know, and then, God, you see her on the poor interview circuit and all the other Avengers are being asked like real action questions. And they're asking her about her hair and her makeup and her costume. That's literally, I mean, it's just, it's really kind of sad in that respect. But here she finally got her own movie. I didn't want one for the longest time, but I was like Amanda, I wasn't that excited for it. But then after like WandaVision and the wackiness of Loki, I was so happy to have something semi-grounded in the Marvel world. I was just ecstatic to be like, you know, even though it's outrageous and there's some crazy set pieces and, you know, the entire battle where you have, you know, a person basically plummeting from the sky without a parachute and somehow landing perfectly fine.
Right.
And they have no superpowers, you know, is ludicrous, but still it was still kind of grounded in many ways for most of the movie. Tons of humor. I was just really excited. Like, by the end of the movie, I kind of felt like she got robbed because she should have got her own trilogy. You know, I mean, she obviously wasn't the problem. The writing for her character all along was the problem. You know, that's what I got.
That's an issue and a complaint I have with most of the MCU because the female characters we know from the comics have really cool backstories. And they have a lot that they can do, and they're incredibly powerful. I mean, people did not realize how powerful Scarlet Witch was until WandaVision. And they're like, whoa, she can do all of that? Yeah, she's probably the only one who can stand up to all of these superheroes and live to tell the tale. But now we're finally getting into these stories about these, I don't want to say strong female characters, but the ones that have stories and they're more meaningful than just being there to fight in the good old fight and look good in spandex. Although I will say, I love that this is directed by a female and it felt like a Michael Bay film in some parts in terms of there's looking at ScarJo's butt.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of ass shots. Like,
I'm like,
even the female director's like, she does have like a world class. She got it going on. She does have America's ass. Like really, yes, Chris Evans has the male side. She has the female side. So now we've got it covered.
She does. She got a big old booty.
I don't really know how I feel about, because it's the only movie that didn't, in the last like 8-9 years, it hasn't had like another superhero drop by. I mean, I get kind of why there wouldn't be, but in the same token, I feel like, wouldn't it have been kind of cool if one of her, like Chris Evans popped in or something, or one of the other characters for a Stinger? Or you're glad you wanted her to stand completely on her own?
That's what I wanted.
Yeah, I get that. I'm just saying like from a movie perspective, from a fan perspective.
From a fan perspective, that is what I was really hoping for. Because what would happen if Captain America came into this one, or Iron Man came into this one, or anybody came into this one? Would be that the focus would be on that character. A lot of the stories and the headlines and the news articles would be about that character popping in. It wouldn't be about Black Widow. It wouldn't be about Scarlett Johansson. It would be all about that pop in. And I like that they are really, and I'm sure people are tired of this, like, oh, get over it, women. But it's like, it's really cool to see such a badass character on the screen doing her thing. And it's all about her, and it's about her empowering women. And it's like, man, this is something that I don't think I've really ever seen on TV or on a film screen before. So
every ass kicker is a woman, every single one, because Alexi is really kind of a boob, and he's the only dude. So
he's a big old boob.
Everybody, because Taskmaster, they made that a woman, and that was a male character before. Now, as you bring it up, so I'm going to ask you, like, this is a very pointed storyline, like you talked about men trying to control women, manipulating them for their own benefits. Amanda, you're a woman, so I think it's fair to ask you, like, how does using this as a storyline in 2021 work for you?
It works because it's not something where it's drawing from specific instances in 2021 or in our real world, but it parallels to real life situations that can make you think about it. Like, I don't have to have them talking about some things that are actually going on in our world to understand that there's a parallel between this and human trafficking and abuse and just being so controlled. I've been in that situation. I've been in domestic violence relationships, and the powerless feeling that you have and the feeling that you get when you're free, it's wild. And so to see that represented on screen and such a beautiful way where you see the sad parts of it. I mean, when the moment where Dreykov shows all of the women's pictures, he pulls it up and they're in the red room, and he brings them all up, and it looks like just a big red blur at one point because there's so many widows. And you just get to think about like how she's going to be able to help save all those girls. And it's just amazing, like, to think about. And you can parallel that to the real world. Imagine if somebody did that and saved that quantity of women from being oppressed. And to, I mean, the movie is specifically talking about this was made to remove free will.
Yeah.
And she saves them. I think it's huge. Yeah.
She saves them by taking a punch and then like, oh, you don't hit hard enough, so I'll do it myself. I thought that was
I loved that.
That was one of my favorite moments because I saw where it was going and I'm like, wait, what? Oh, shit. What?
Yeah, I'm like, which nerve does she have to sever? And then she smashes her head and I'm like, oh, okay.
And it's like even more poignant because it's oh, you can't hurt me because I'm a man and I smell like a man. And therefore, because of that, there's no way you're going to hurt me because I'm a man. And I'm like, dude, like, what a jackass. It's like I'm saying in my head, I'm like, what
the
a jackass.
The power control. And that's something that happens when you have that much wealth and you have that many people under your thumb.
Troy, I want to segue to you now. There's definitely a ton of Marvel here, but there's also a lot of Alias and the Americans floating around here with this Russian spy family plot. So what did you think about, because God knows you wanted to talk about him. What did you think about David Harbour and Rachel Weisz and Florence Pugh? Pew, pew. I just
thought the whole cast is great. I mean, going back to like Amanda's point, I think what was really great about this is that they grounded the concept of the movie. It's not like they just did it's a Me Too movement. We have to have a female Me Too movie to put on our thing and, you know, knock it up on the whatever at Disney. Like they actually took the Red Sparrow program in Russia was like a real thing. So it's like this is very reminiscent of the Red Sparrow program in a lot of ways. And taking that and shining a light on that program specifically, and then also taking the concept from the Cold War, like Aaron was saying with the Americans, or even like Independence USA was an episode from Blacklist Redemption, different show.
Do you get money every time you just say the word Blacklist?
He does. Anybody says it. So he's getting paid when you said it. I'm just like, exactly.
The whole premise, though, was that they put sleeper agents. They trained people to be Americans and live among us. And I think that all of this was like rooted in reality. So because it's rooted in reality, it makes the superhero effectiveness of it all and in this Marvel universe totally believable. And so you can actually go on the ride and go, oh, yeah, this totally makes sense how there would be superhumans, but they really don't have superpowers because it's the things that they're able to accomplish with the resources that they have that make it happen. Unless you're, of course, Alexi, who's just a bumbling goofball with the ability to beat crap up.
Yeah, I love that they didn't take away his strength and his ability to do things. Like, he's still a super soldier, but he is real dumb.
I don't know if it's so much dumb as in his bravado is lost. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
He's been emasculated in many respects because he just... You know, he wants to believe in his own legend, but he's lost it because he's been away from it and he's been screwed over and he lost everything that mattered to him over his life. So I actually think there's more layers to him than than just the boob. I just, you know, very much Marvel likes to do that. Just look at Thor. You know, they love to make their big strapping men boobs, but it works for the
film. It's more poignant though, right? Because
because I think they gave him a real character. If you really, you just got to look under the layers because yeah, he played some of it for comedy, but you can see there's moments of it where it really was really hitting him hard that he didn't become what Captain America was. And he could have been, you know, all these could have beens in his life. And I think everybody's had that to some respect where you start thinking about what I could have been, what it could have been, what it should have been. And that's what he's living off of. Like his whole life is based on what could have been. And then he sees everyone in his family is stronger than him, even though he has powers. You know, he's the only one that actually has superpowers, and he's the weakest of all four of them.
And I also really like for his story where he's starting to realize that the legend he left behind, where he thought he did everything right and he was the best parent to these girls and that he took care of them and that he did everything that he was supposed to do. He fully believes that that's the case, you know, going into this film, even though we all know that is not, you know, he didn't do the right things. And when they start telling him, that world starts to crumble. And I think that's even a good reflection of and character development in general for writing. But for many people, it's hard to recognize how you didn't do what you thought you did. You have your own perspective and you have what you thought was the right thing being done until someone else tells you, no, man, you screwed up my life. Like you did the wrong thing. And coming to terms with that is huge. And so I think that takes his character to a deeper level.
I mean, my hope is that younger females will have the same resonance with this movie as they did with Wonder Woman. I mean, I don't think it's quite the, you know, coming into no man's land sequence where you're just kind of like, oh crap, she's like super badass. And you have like that superhero kind of thing, but they emphasized her quote unquote special move or finishing move or whatever you want to call it. her landing stance, her pose.
Yeah. Her pose,
you know? So hopefully the BBFC lets us be a PG rating and not a 12A rating. So that 8-year olds, cause I could see 8-year olds running around just doing the pose constantly.
Absolutely.
Like, look at me.
I hope so.
I think it's just, it's super empowering that way.
I was so, I mean, Rachel Weisz was great. I'm not taking anything away from her. But man, Florence Pugh is an actress I think everybody's been talking about for a couple of years now. And I didn't see what she's going to do with the role because everything I've seen her in is kind of like dramatic work. So I'm like, okay, so I wonder how she's going to play. And she's funny as the whole family is really funny as hell.
Yeah.
And she in particular is just so much like a perfect bratty sister. Like she's so much the perfect bratty younger sister. Like, yes, she's playing this badass assassin and she can kill anyone, but she is just the perfect brat. And I love that about her character because it wasn't too much. It was like, she's still, you know, you see where she's coming from and everything else, but she has a lot of emotion and a lot of like feeling for Natasha underneath everything, you know, for her father, who she sees as her father, because these were her most formative years. So even though Natasha's kind of worked through it, you know, for her, that was her world. Like that was the best part of her world. And so she's having a harder time with everything, but also she just calls things as they are. And she just doesn't have time for anybody's BS. And I thought, man, if ever there's a character where I'm like, okay, she gets a spinoff, like she's the one. I know she's going to be in like Thunderbolts or something like that, but I would just watch a movie with her as a Black Widow.
Well, since we're in the spoiler section, we can talk about the post-credit sequence.
Oh, we're coming to it. Hang tight. That's coming up. So I got it. Don't you worry about it.
She is already in a sequence or a sequel.
Kind of.
Spinoff.
But we don't know what it's going to be, right? Is it going to be a movie? Is it going to be one of these Marvel series? We don't know what it's going
to
be.
It's a Marvel series already in post-production.
Is it?
Yeah, Hawkeye is coming to Disney Plus.
But I don't know, is that what it's going to be? Is the Hawkeye series?
That's what, she's listed as an actress in the series.
Okay.
And in 2020, Feige had said something about her being included in future MCU films and possibly becoming the next Black Widow. So.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, but I didn't know exactly to what extent that meant. So that's cool.
But Speaking of characters coming back from the dead, when she whistled, I was like, oh, please don't
have a whistle back. Oh, I know.
Please don't have a whistle back.
She comes walking out with Loki. I was waiting for it.
Yep.
Loki's like, I got her back. She didn't have to jump. Ah.
It's almost like I wish D23 never would have happened to tell us that Multiverse of Madness was coming. Because I'm just like, now I'm like, anybody can show up at any time.
Are you guys legitimately worried about that? Or do you want, I mean, I want Black Widow to stay dead.
But they want Black Widow to stay dead. Right. I want Scarlett Johansson
to stay dead.
Yes.
Natasha Romanoff. That's who you want to stay dead.
Because now we've introduced us to Yelena Belova. So I want to see more Yelena Belova.
But in the same token.
And in the comics, Yelena takes it anyway.
Yeah, she does. Correct. I mean, she does. But there's a lot of Black Widow. So like a lot of people can wear that mantle. But I'm saying like in terms of Hawkeye, that's the only thing I was kind of hoping, because they have such a great relationship and they play off each other so well. And it's kind of immediate emotion as far as I'm concerned. So I was kind of hoping there was a way that Scarlett Johansson was working into that show. But now, I mean, it seems very obvious that you explain that Yelena is going to be in that show. Like, I didn't know that was going to be the plot for it. I figured it. But then again, Hawkeye was part of Thunderbolts, so I could see that. Now I can see it kind of all.
Maybe the TV show leads into the movie.
Yep, I can see that.
And maybe they'll have a rapport, right? Maybe they, you know,
they should, right? I mean,
chase and kill each other and do the fun stuff and remember the times. And it's like a, you know, it could be a comedic back and forth kind of chase series. But at the same time, then towards the end of it, then they become that partnership that Natasha had with Hawkeye.
Or his daughter, because I know his daughter's part of it. So maybe his daughter will take the mantle and run off with Yelena and join Thunderbolts. Well, here's another thing I want to talk about. So they drastically changed Taskmaster, right? So that the character is directly tied into Black Widow's history instead of Tony Masters, like in the comics. It's the daughter of Dracoff, Antonia, who Natasha thought she killed in the blast that was supposed to kill Dracoff. So basically, Natasha blew up a building and didn't kill anyone she was supposed to, by the way. Did anybody else notice this? Her biggest claim to fame, and she didn't get either person she was trying to kill?
I mean, with that much money and security and stuff, I mean, I guess it makes sense that
we watched that little girl blow up. We watched that little girl blow up. Like, she was at the window waving.
Well, we watched the building. We didn't watch her.
She was at the window waving.
She moved back inside. She waved and then she went back inside, like closer. So it's possible. I just don't know how it worked out logistically. It's
the same way Han worked out.
I don't think it's as bad as
I think
Han.
I think it's worse. I think it's absolutely worse than Han. Like, I realize that Marvel is on this, like, immaculate pedestal.
She could jump out the window. That's much different.
Give me what? She's, like, 8. What is she lunging out a window? Which, fun fact, Olga Kurylenko actually plays her grown-up version, and she's 5 years older than Scarlett Johansson. I think that's just kind of a fun fact.
Oh, wow.
Just a fun little fact. And Olga is just a dream if you've never seen her. But anyway. What did you guys think about Taskmaster as this, like, as the villain who can emulate the opponent's moves and whatnot? I mean,
I was super confused because I thought Taskmaster was a Spider-Man thing.
No. Taskmaster's all over the Marvel
universe.
Isn't
he a villain though to Spider-Man at some point?
He's a villain. He's a villain across the Marvel spectrum. Really?
Right.
He actually has worked with or against Punisher and Daredevil and like a whole bunch of them. He's just a Marvel villain.
Yeah. Right. But he's primarily thought of in the Spider-Man universe. I mean, he's in the video game and.
I don't think primarily, no. I mean, I just think he's been in that universe, yes. But he's been in a lot of universes. So he's kind of like a. We need a villain here. Throw in Taskmaster. He's one of those guys. But he has a very kind of built up backstory. And that's kind of what I find fascinating, because for all of what people say Marvel does, where they really appreciate the comics and they treat the comics with respect and they respect comic fans, they're constantly taking stuff that isn't part of the comics and rolling with it. Like, just go back to Iron Man 3 and think of the Mandarin and how they actually made him a joke. They literally made that villain a joke. And here they take Taskmaster and it's not a joke at all, but they just kind of make the character part of Natasha's story when that character was never part of Natasha's story in the Marvel lexicon. Don't get me started on the whole Uncle Ben thing. So you've got a lot of things where they're making changes, and I don't know how you guys feel about them making these changes when Marvel or comic book fans have always been very much slaves to the material, except apparently when it's a Marvel film. Make the same change in DC, people are outraged. I just think it's an important point to make.
Well, and the reasons for doing it and the method that it's done differs between Marvel and DC. I'm not arguing one way or the other, just to throw that out, though.
I don't agree with that. I think it's for the benefit of the film. It's the same thing that the filmmaker thought for the DC changes. So it's
and benefit I of the feel film. Like the Taskmaster change works here. I like this change. I think it humanizes Taskmaster in a way that I don't feel like the comics have done, because it again is not necessarily about this person doing this who's had this ability since they were a young child. It's about a young child who lost their free will and their father basically made them into this thing and they had no control over what they were doing. And who they were attacking. They were just a robot under their thumb. It was just another person who operated as Dracoff wanted them to. And so I actually appreciated that idea of it, where it made him more of a monster by doing that to his own child.
I mean, he was already pretty much like as Bond villain as he could get.
He was awful, but it makes it worse because you don't do that to family.
He's my biggest problem with the whole movie. I just think Ray Winstone is not a great actor, I don't think. And I thought he overacted the shit out of it. And to the point where it's just like, you know, there's no level of humanity at all in this guy. So he jumps to the bottom level where it's just like, he's just all bad, right? He's just all bad. Just wants to dominate the world, control the world. Same old Bond thing, which is fine. I'm not knocking it, but I just found that to be a little forced in terms of the storytelling. I'm not saying it didn't work or it did work or didn't work. It's fine. And I don't really care much about the character of Taskmaster. It's just more of Marvel does it. It always gets a blessing. DC does it. It gets lambasted. And I don't think it's that much of a difference. That's all the point I'm making. But in terms of the character, Taskmaster was kind of a cool character. The fights were fun. And it was a tragedy.
I think if it's a timeline too, because if I remember correctly in the comics, Taskmaster shows up and the government hires Taskmaster during the Civil War and actually inserts Taskmaster into the Thunderbolts at that same time. So there is a potential that this Taskmaster character from a movie perspective could continue on in the DC universe, in the Marvel universe as we move into this next phase.
Yeah.
Well, definitely with the Thunderbolts. Right. I mean, that's what Val is rounding up, right? Like she's trying to build to her Thunderbolt team.
Mm-hmm.
Which
I think so.
Can anybody explain the Thunderbolts? They're basically like the anti-Avengers, right? To kind of explain what they are for people that are wondering what we keep saying in case
they
don't know.
They're reformed supervillains.
Right.
Yeah. It's basically the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
I guess that's fair. It's Marvel's Suicide Squad. And in that squad, you had Zemo, who you saw in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and he's off on his own. Yelena's Black Widow. Punisher is in it. God, I hope that, please, dear God, bring him back. That would be amazing. Winter Soldier, he's in it. And, you know, that could be fun. And it's all led by Julia Louise Dreyfus's Valentina Allegra de Fontaine.
Yeah, doesn't Hawkeye become the leader of the Thunderbolts in the comics, if I remember correctly?
I know he's
well. There's a lot of different versions too.
True.
So, like Luke Cage has his own, and I know Winter Soldier has its own. So I think it depends on which one you're talking about. And Punisher.
What did you guys think of the whole Dracoff as the master villain? Like I talked about him a little bit, but did you guys like him as a villain, or am I off on that? That he was just totally Bondian.
He was totally a Bond villain, in a bad way.
So I'm not the only one where I was like, okay, this guy's getting on my nerves. He's just over the top.
I mean, it was cool when they had the sequence between him and ScarJo in his office. I thought that was fun to watch the back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It was also tiresome also. Like, it sets up a really great sequence, like you were saying, when she smashes her face on the desk, that he doesn't have the power over her. And then when he loses the ring and he's trying to go back for it, but everybody's trying to shove him into in the copter or the plane or jet engine or whatever the hell the thing was. I think the character itself was kind of acted weak and written weak, personally, in this movie. The concept is good, but
I think that character is weak. I think that's the whole reason why anybody who has to remove free will from an enormous quantity of people to get them to see through their vision, like operate out that vision, is somebody who is weak in general. And so for you to get FaceTime with him one-on-one, and she actually fakes him out with the pheromone thing. She's because he, well, she doesn't fake him out, but she gets behind it. She gets around it. And so he's kind of just, he seems like an idiot because ScarJo is three steps ahead of him. And I don't think that there's any way you could make a character like that redeemable in any way, given any humanities, with the way this film is presented. When you're looking through it from a female empowerment and kind of launching it to and tying it to reality-based circumstances, if you give any credibility or humanity to that character, what does that say about the depth and seriousness of what this person is doing?
It says you're a good writer. Like, honestly, that's what it means. It means you're a good writer. Like, I don't think
I want that character to have any humanity.
The best villains have some story where you at least you don't agree with it, but villains have to believe wholeheartedly in their mission. And at no point did I feel like he was any, like, you've got this really deep kind of, where you do kind of have a character who's overseeing a sex trafficking ring and whatnot. And I get that to some degree, like, essentially that's what it is, right? And mind manipulation and everything else. But he's just so over the top. It kind of takes away from the impact that the rest of the story had to me. And I think it sounds like it was for Troy as well. But it just very much, I just think any actor could have done that part a little bit better. I think it was an acting problem. He just overacted the hell out of it to where it was just like, well, of course, I never for a second thought he had any chance against Scarlett Johansson. Not for even a second. Like, yeah. As soon as she shows up, I'm like, well, he already lost because he's just so ridiculous. I mean, I don't want to say he was bad, but he wasn't good. Like, I really think if you put Gary Oldman in a part like that, I think he's going to crush it. You know, you put Michael Rooker in a part like that, he's going to crush it. And he's going to find a way to put some kind of, not necessarily humanity where you empathize with him, but where they seem like a real person. He always felt like a caricature. He never felt like a real person.
I'll give you that from the actor perspective, because I think from the writing perspective, it was in there when he's talking about how he saved them, that they were thrown away. They were, because in many cases, that's what they're told, is that they were dropped off on a doorstep. Their parents didn't want them. And we actually find out from Natasha that she was just taken from her parents. And he's thinking that he's doing them justice by giving them an actual purpose. So I would agree that a different actor could have enhanced that villain. I just strongly believe that the writing of that character was fine enough.
Well, the acting sucked then. Because
I'll give you the acting.
I buried her in a grave. Sure did. Yeah, you want to see it? It's on 3rd and 4th Street. Check it out.
The problem with villains, to be a good villain, you have to believe that they truly believe that they're doing the right thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think that's the thing that's missing here. Like, if you truly saved these girls from the gutter, basically, then he would have been more of a father figure and he would have fought more and he would have felt more love and compassion to say, like, I'm taking care of my children. And I never got the essence from him that these were his children. That he would do anything to protect these girls.
They were just his property.
Yeah.
Sure, there's evil men like that, but, like, there's no point. It's just that he just never felt like a real character. That's all, like, Pew felt real. Yelena felt real. Melina felt real. Even Alexei felt real. Like, he felt like I said earlier, I really liked his character. I felt like he had a real arc and, you know, everybody's kind of, he's a goof of the movie to a degree, sure, but I think he had a real arc, like a fallen hero who never got what he wanted. He never hit the goals and everybody else like surpassed him. I think that's a real arc.
Or just a cool dad that tells good dad jokes.
That too. Of course you would love that. Black Widow obviously has a great arc. I mean, everybody seems like they have a personality and they have a real presence of sorts, except for that one guy. And he's kind of a pivotal character.
And maybe that's the one thing for me that was the issue, because I kept saying as we left the theater, like, it's great. I loved it. It was fun. but there's just one thing that was just off and I can't put my finger on it. And maybe this is the one thing, is that I just didn't feel like the villain was villain enough.
Yeah, maybe.
Can we take a second to admire and or laugh about his allyship with Bill Clinton and Vladimir Putin in the beginning of the film, where they have those photographs they're going through to try to show you that this is somewhat reality based?
That was weird.
I thought it was hilarious. I'm like, oh, they're going for it.
Yeah, it was kind of funny, but it was also a little like, oh,
can we talk about though how awesome that cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit was?
That was
amazing. Great cover. I could finally understand the lyric for the first time in history.
Oh my god.
Like my whole life I've just been like entertain, oh, you know. Now I actually hear him, like, I can hear it. Like, I know what the lyrics are because I had to look them up like everybody else at the time. But now I can clearly hear them word for word. And you're right, it's fantastic cover. Great.
And haunting in a lot of ways.
Very haunting.
It was very haunting. Yeah, that's a great description.
Any issues with the movie? Troy, was it 20 minutes too long?
The exposition like almost killed it for me. There's just so much talking. Like, the action sequences are so good, and I love the set pieces are so good, and it's everything you want a summer blockbuster popcorn movie to be. But then the whole thing just kind of grinds to a halt when they have these long exposition scenes, like the dinner table, or even when they're in the office and they're just going back and forth and talking about it. I'm like, do something. Like, it's ScarJo, do something, please, dear God, do something. And then when the something happens, it's almost like you went from like, I was just about to take a nap, to holy crap, you just shocked my system. So I think that shift was a little bit more of a jarring issue for me. That doesn't make it like an Iron Man 1. It makes it more like a Ragnarok kind of feel in a way.
Okay. That's an interesting way to look at it. I mean, I get it. There were a couple scenes where I thought it was probably just that one, right? It was just that middle section where they're on the farm. It went on a little too long.
Yeah.
With the pigs and everything. And that was a little too long. I mean, it's kind of mean to the pig, but that's beside the point. What about you, man? Any issues with the movie specifically?
I would have liked to see a little bit more struggle for Black Widow with her heroism, with trying to accept who she is and her past and everything. It just felt like we talked about it, but I didn't really feel like that actually was how she felt. You know what I mean? It was this big dark secret, and then it was like, well, let me tell you about the time that I just blew this kid up. And it's like, oh, but then that didn't really happen. So it just, those kinds of things I felt like were missing from the script in terms of making it a deeper impact and having Black Widow, like, from the get-go, she's just the hero. And throughout the whole story, she's the hero. So there weren't any of those moments where, and in a lot of superhero movies, the hero has to kind of fight with themselves about what they're going to do and if they're making the right decision and if this is what they should be doing, that sort of thing.
And maybe that was part of the issue too, that was the finger of the pulse of the whole thing, because you get this gimmick of the vials, and the vials are this magic cure that's going to break the spell that's on the Black Widows across the world or whatever. And here you have ScarJo talking about, like, I have a family, or I had a family, and now the Avengers are breaking up because of Civil War. I almost felt like it would have been great to see her try to go save the Black Widows and then have the Black Widows as a team go against the bad guy. She did this like, I'm just going to go by myself and just go beat him up. And then you're going to go find the two people that aren't really your family to come help you. It just seemed, I don't know, maybe I was expecting a different movie. And that's why it was a little off for me.
I mean, it kind of worked happenstance, even though it was happenstance, it kind of worked out fine.
Yeah,
plot-wise, it does. But even though, like, the whole climax is in Cloud City, and I'm like, as soon as they got there, I'm like, where's Lando? What the hell? It's weird. Nobody notices this giant Cloud City floating around? Like, nobody's noticed this on a radar or a scanner of any kind? I don't...
Because he always flew above the radar.
It's... Yeah. I mean, satellites are in space. They know that, right? Like, when they were writing this movie, they knew that the satellites are up further. I don't think that math checks out. The only issue I had an issue, like, Mason is a character where everybody is supposed to be like, oh, I love this guy, but we don't really know who this guy is. You know, he just gets her stuff and shows up randomly, and we're supposed to be like all on board. He's fine when he's there, but I feel like he's not there enough for me to care about. that screen time I didn't need.
All I kept saying was, oh, hey, it's Luke from Handmaids. Hey, look, it's Luke from Handmaids. I hate Luke and Handmaids, and I hate this guy, too, in here. Can you just not be in this movie, please?
Yeah.
He just doesn't really do... He didn't really add any... I mean, I think he's supposed to be, like, lightweight banter, and he was. You know, he's kind of enjoyable, but on the same token, I'm just like, this guy's just taking up screen time. Like, he's not adding anything to the movie except explaining how she got a helicopter. And you could do that faster.
Yeah.
I would agree. There's one other thing that I wanted to mention, too, that I struggled with, which relates back to the comics of Black Widow. Okay. And her history, and it's not necessarily something where I'm like, this should have been in there. It's just something like, how did this not become a thing? Like, so all these years, she was brainwashed, and they maintain that consistently in this film, that she experienced that same brainwashing. And so in the comics, at least, a lot of them are command-based, and so they can verbally say a command, and it can put them even into, like, a comatose state. Mm-hmm. At no point was there anything other than this chip implant that can change you. It was, and I felt like they tried to bring up psychology in so many different ways, but even the simple command that could have even stopped her in her tracks for a second to make her contemplate her own decision, that would have been cool to see. It just felt like it was all about the chemical reaction.
Yeah.
And whether you have that in there. And I would have liked to see them not talk about the psychology of this, how this affected them, but actually show the psychology of how this brainwashing and manipulation can affect them long term.
And how does it last for years?
Yeah.
What kind of fancy chemicals you got going on here? Because why do you need Black Widows? Just throw this stuff on everybody.
Well, they have a chip, so they have a chip implanted into them.
I understand that, but kidnap them, put a chip in, dose them, get them out of there. Boom.
Yeah.
Now you got a covert op.
The tech, too, I think was the issue, right? Like when the one widow ends up killing herself because he wants her dead, and the tech is the one that kind of overrides her neurons or whatever you want to call it, because it's like interlocked or interlaced with each other. Mm-hmm. So I think that instead of the verbal commands, it was more of a tech command.
That was a cool scene, by the way. That was a cool scene.
It was dark.
But if he ever forgets his password, his whole program is screwed. Like, you know what I mean? Or loses that ring.
Or he takes his ring off to make hamburgers, you know? Yeah,
screwed.
Joe, call IT. We need to get rid of her now.
Screwed. Absolutely screwed.
I can't remember my password. I changed it a month ago.
Do you remember what car you drove? What was the first car? Favorite moments or set pieces? I'm going to tell you right now, the prison breakout was fantastic. I absolutely loved that scene. It was so fun. So much fun.
Yeah.
Her swinging on the rope from the helicopter was actually believable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, almost everything about that whole scene was great. And I loved how Yelena is just bad at flying that helicopter all over the place. Like, she's not great. Yep. And then she just puts the thing into freaking
autopilot.
Thank you. And then blows up the tower. I thought that was like one of my favorite moments.
She just pulls out like a bazooka. She's like, nah, man, I ain't got time for this. Yeah,
stop shooting at me. So that was probably one of my favorite scenes, and that was a lot of fun.
And the avalanche that then follows was awesome too.
Oh yeah. Oh god, that was great. That was great. Oops. Any other favorite moments or set pieces? I mean, I obviously her getting down from the Cloud City all the way to the ground, I thought was, even though ridiculous, I thought it was really cool. And that whole, every time she's posing, even while she's dropping from the sky, was pretty fabulous.
Well, and she does grab, she grabs Taskmaster, and Taskmaster does have a parachute. So the getting to the ground part, I think, was still fine. Because, where she didn't have a parachute, Taskmaster did deploy a chute right before it landed. So,
but she didn't know that when she made that move, is all I'm saying. Like,
and she has incredible aim to be able to connect to all these bodies that are floating through the air.
She's like, bing, bing, bing. It's like Tetris in the sky.
Her sword just lands at the right time, and she grabs the cliff at the edge, you know, just hangs there for the right time. She did a lot of that. She did a lot of hanging from, like, when the railing came, and she was hanging from the three railings, and then when she slid, and then she's hanging from the edge. She likes to live there, foreshadowing for future places where she hangs.
Oh, that's sad. There was a lot of really cool choreography in terms of the stunts, though, that I feel like really impressed me. Because that was the one big thing with Black Widow in the other MCU movies is that she always had cool fight scenes because of the way she moved. And here we get two of that. We get Florence Pugh's and we also get ScarJo doing it. And so it was like watching a dance sequence in many mm-hmm. ways and so often throughout the film. And I was like, this is just awesome. I love it.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, the apartment sequence, Yelena versus Natasha. Yep. I just watched that all day.
Yeah. That's such a and I fight. Like their camaraderie as sisters. Like, I would fully believe that they grew up together as sisters. And this is kind of what Aaron was talking about earlier. But they just, they had that chemistry where they would bicker and argue the way two sisters would, even though they've been apart for so long. They just get under each other's skin and they have to correct one another and they're fighting about everything. But in the end of the day, they love each other.
Oh, and the line at the end. Oh, we're both upside down. It was like, yeah, oh, it was funny.
Oh, man, so Yelena was so great. Is that when she's in the convenience store and she actually does the pose and she just plays it up.
Yeah.
like this pose. You do the pose and the hair flip. And it's just like, because you've seen her do that so many times. And I'm just like, good for her for being willing to make fun of herself like that. Because, I mean, she was an executive producer, so she had to okay some of the stuff. And I'm just like, good for her. Because so many people are would not be okay with mocking themselves like that. That was fun.
And then she falls in the hallway and does the pose. And then she's like, no, that doesn't feel right.
Yeah. But I love in the convenience store sequence, too, she's doing it. And then she also talks about how they've murdered so many people. And this grocery store clerk, like, we don't see them, but presumably is probably just standing there like, what the fuck am I in the middle of right now?
What is
like,
happening?
What yeah, I would say happening? Florence actually almost stole the show, to be quite
she
honest.
She did. She really did.
They made that intentional. They wanted to give some equal screen time to both characters, to both actresses, because they were so impressed with Florence Pugh in her audition or whatever.
And I will tell you, I mean, even though I rolled my eyes a little bit when they had the whole face-off scene, when they Mission Impossible, the faces.
Oh, the switcheroo between her and Rachel?
The old switcheroo. Even though I thought, oh my God, that is such a Mission Impossible cliche lame ass thing, I was still fooled by it, so I was kind of like, all right, I'm on board.
Yeah
I still didn't see it coming, which I should have, I guess.
Yeah, because she was all like, oh, I called the whatever it was, the red room. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I called red room and they're gonna be here in like, you know, 10 minutes or whatever. You totally thought that Melania was like turned on the family.
I did.
Yeah, I did too.
Well played. Yeah, that's well played.
Yep,
except I'm sitting there going, well, they really, how does, you start thinking about it for 10 seconds and you realize it's ridiculous because you're like, so the thing covered the hair too, like the whole hair was replaced with this little techno gizmo? That doesn't make any goddamn sense. Because Rachel Weisz has completely different hair than ScarJo and a different face. That's a whole lot of tech in 10 minutes. That's all I'm saying.
Don't overthink it.
But you're thinking about it now, right? Exactly.
No, I thought about it then.
Yeah, it's a digital
projection. But they also
have
like a super space thing up in the clouds where they're having all the people hang out.
I buy that more than the faces with the hair.
I'm just saying, they have technology. We apparently don't.
I also buy that more than I do Dracoff being a real character because he's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
I agree with what you said.
The other favorite thing, the stinger is very moving. I was actually kind of surprised at how much seeing her grave and realizing she's really dead, even though, I mean, she was killed in some other dimension or something. So I don't know. I guess they just put a marker up for the hell of it. But that was very moving. Like, I thought that was very touching. So that was.
Oh, and then who she's standing with at the gravesite was like, oh, hello. That's interesting.
Val?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Val's the one that's going to lead the Thunderbolts.
I know.
So, boom.
Yeah. I mean,
that was funny too when they're talking about their pay. She's like, I want a raise. She's like, me too, honey.
So final big question. Do you guys want another Black Widow movie set in a time frame where she was alive with Scarlett Johansson?
I think as long as Florence Pugh is in it, because that's what I really want. Like this gave ScarJo her moment for her character. But I didn't feel like it was really just all about the actress. It felt like it was more dedicated to Black Widow, the character. And so being able to see that live on through other actresses, I'm cool with. So if we have a Florence Pugh Black Widow movie and then we get a Jodie Comer Black Widow movie, like, I'm okay with all of those.
Yeah, because I think the only way you could do a ScarJo movie would have to be like during the period of the snap, right?
Mm-hmm. The 5-year period.
Yeah. And just what is she doing during that period to keep the team alive? You know, and what big bads are they fighting during that period of time? That'd be the only way you could do another movie that would make sense.
But you could do it. So would you want to see it?
Oh, I'd see it. Yeah. I'd watch ScarJo in anything.
Okay. I would check it out. And I really want the whole family thing to come back. I want David Harbour to come back. I want Rachel Weisz to come back. I think I think Rachel Weisz didn't really get enough to do here, and she's a great actress. So hopefully she'll be back in some respect. And David Harbour impressed the hell out of me. I mean, just him putting on that suit was like, that's 5 minutes of solid comedy gold right there.
Yeah, that was hilarious. He was great. And he had the best accent out of everybody, because even Florence's, hers, I could hear it go.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
A lot, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even Rachel Weisz's, but David Harbour's was pretty solid through most of the film.
Well, he's been practicing that Russian accent since 2019.
Yeah, right. That's funny.
It's like I've been in this Russian prison forever. Maybe Stranger Things
will just... What is season 4 coming?
Maybe they'll just use the footage from this movie. That would be pretty great, huh? If it just shows him and he's still doing the same stuff.
Exactly.
That would be fun. All right, so if $10 full price of admission, what do you give Black Widow, Troy?
Like, I don't want to hate it. 7.
That's a good score. Okay. I don't understand you sometimes.
Well, you yelled at me when I gave something a 6, and it was like...
Well, you like... Or no, you said you didn't like it. You made it sound like you didn't like
it. Yeah, you made it sound like you hated the movie, and then all of a sudden it was a 6, and I think we were both like, how the hell did it get a 6?
You made me feel like Luca from the song, not from the movie. That's what you made me feel like. And people that heard the song, they know what I'm talking about. So, Amanda, what do you give it if $10 is full price of admission?
I already want to rewatch it, and for a moment considered paying the $30 to watch it at home again. Wow. But, so I'm going to give it a $7.50. Because I'm already interested in rewatching it.
Yep. I'm giving it $7.50 as well. It's fun, man. I liked it more than Fast 9. And probably the best Marvel thing I've seen in a while. So, but I haven't seen a Marvel thing in a while. So I guess the TV show.
It's been years.
It's better than any of the Marvel TV shows that I've seen either.
You shut your mouth.
No, it is.
Okay, that's just because you're being a Loki hater, and you're in the minority.
I don't hate Loki. I said it's fine.
You don't even keep up with the episodes, and you're like very meh.
Because it's just fine. It's literally just fine. Not everything in Marvel has to be amazing. You guys know that, right? Like, some things can be just, it's just okay.
Not everything has been amazing, but Loki is more than meh.
And WandaVision was ecstatic. I loved WandaVision.
Amazing. Thank you.
Everything about it
was really good. But I still like Black Widow more. But this is more like my world. I like Grounded more.
You like movies more.
And I like, I do like movies more. I do. Because I feel like they're just, man, all the TV stories feel like they could have just been one good movie.
Troy and I like TV shows. We like that they can continue.
You guys just don't want to leave
your house.
I just
like WandaVision because the first three were like, oh man, nostalgia city.
Right?
Like, I love Lucy and Leave It to Beaver. And oh man, I totally love Bewitched and... all the 70s stuff. And oh my gosh, it's like Malcolm in the Middle all over again.
And it was so creative. And Scarlet Witch is amazing.
And then when you found out what was really happening, you were like, okay, now we're into the movie part. And it like felt like a movie told over 3 weeks. It was great. Mm-hmm.
And all those things would have been better if it was a movie. I'm just saying. That's going to do it for this episode. I think it's time we head out of here. So we've already set our outro. We're done. Anything you guys want to say about Black Widow and parting?
Just go see it.
Go see it in the theater, because I ate so much popcorn, which means I was really enjoying myself.
You literally just pimped Premier Access.
I said I almost did, and I didn't spend the money. I would rather go see it again in the theater, sir.
But you were thinking about it. You just put that subliminally. You just did the mind control. You just did the Draco thing right there with the people listening to go spend the $30.
I don't think that's comparable to what Dreykov did
theater,
at all.
Theater. That's how you do it. That's how
popcorn mind control works. Was so good.
Next time you go to the theater to see Black Widow, buy popcorn. I'm better now.
We'll have to blow through this episode.
It'll be fine. It's not that bad. You took a nap, didn't you?
He only has till 10:30.
If he's got to leave, I understand. All right. Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly, or not?
I thought we were blowing through the podcast.
See, this is on him.
You're such a dork.
It's on him.